Hey, everybody, this is Steli Efti.
And this is Heaton Cha.
And in today's episode of Startup Chat, we're going to talk about why Trello failed to build a $1 billion business.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life, and hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit, we got it!
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah.
We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
This is an article that Heaton has written recently, and it's an article that's gotten a lot of attention. It keeps getting, like, my timeline, there's not a single day that I don't get a few people that I follow sharing this article of yours. But there's controversy, right? Not everybody loves this one. So I thought we should chat about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, what I learned about myself, and I think you can relate to this, is when I write content and I'm really passionate about it, it turns out really well. And this was a topic that even before Trello got acquired was bugging me. And what I mean by that is I've tweeted about this even, and the tweets in there before I even wrote about it, before they even sold, and they happened to sell. And I'm like, wait, this business could have been much larger, right? So I titled it the way I did because I really believe Trello was one of the rare businesses that could have been that unicorn status. And I want to make this absolutely clear because people read the title. Some of them don't read the article. They still read the article and then they like tweet at me like, what about your businesses? You didn't do that. I'm like, dude, yeah. Do you not understand? Like, read the article again. I was very complimentary to what they did. At the same time, it's rare to see a business that could have been much, much, much larger. And to me, it's clear how they could have been larger. So I wanted to start there.
Yeah.
It's like, look, like I titled it the way I did because personally, I felt like they could have been much larger with not as much effort as it takes many of us to get that large, you know?
So two things to this, right? One,
yeah.
I think intent matters, right? What you're saying, and I think what many people are missing, I didn't miss this because I know you fairly well, right? But there's a difference between criticizing somebody because you think you're better than them or because you think you're smarter than them or because you just like to tear down others, or because you are, you know, even when people succeed, you want to see the flaw in it. There's a difference between that and the difference between you seeing somebody, even when they're successful, and you criticize them because you deeply care and because you're passionate about what they do and because you're a champion and a fan and an early adopter, because you wanted that company to become all it could be. There's a big difference there to me. And I've talked about this with PG, Paul Graham, oftentimes. Like when he criticizes you, it never feels bad because you can sense that it comes from this innocent place of wanting you to do well, right? And being curious, like harshly curious about what it needs to what it will take to be for you to do well, versus some people that criticize you that where it comes from a place of ego or a place of like just being negative and all that. So you were harsh and it was bugging you because you cared. Right, you really cared about
absolutely.
It, right? That's it.
Yes.
That's it. So
I'm like, look, this is a business that like could have just done so much more for the world instead of getting acquired by another business.
There you go.
You know, and these people, they were all well-meaning, you know, but they had certain things that we can all learn from that they did. That honestly, it was also like I want people to learn from it because I did, and I felt like I could share that because I didn't see anyone talking about it in that way.
There you go. And then the second thing is, I fucking love the headline. And I feel like a way of doing great content is doing it in a way that sometimes will be misunderstood, right? When you do the type of content that a bunch of people will love and nobody will criticize, that's not bad either. And you and I, we don't do a ton of stuff that's super controversial, right? It's not
correct.
Like really our style. But I was loving seeing people tweeting about this article. So lots of people were just sharing it or sharing it with like awesome read. But then there were a few people that were sharing and saying, here's how out of touch Silicon Valley people think a $400 million acquisition is a failure. Like that type of a, like, here's how could you criticize a $400
awesome.
Million? My God, out of touch, arrogant, you know, startup founder, investor, dude. And I was like, I was hearting all these because, especially hearting them. Because I was like, A, this is wrong, but B, I don't have a problem with this. Like, it's fine. Like, you've just given this a very strong headline and some people will rub them the wrong way. But I would bet that, like, almost every single person there did not read the article. This is usually the strongest reactions come from people that just read the headline and never really care to read the article. All right. So either way, let's dive quick. I just wanted to quickly go through these lessons because I think they're valuable lessons to our listeners. And for people that want to like digest this in even more detail, because this is going to be a quick episode, you can go to producthabits.com and you can find the article, Why Trello Failed to Build a $1 Billion Business. But let's go through the key four lessons that stood out to you. Now let's start with the first lesson. Trello didn't monetize free fast enough. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. The key lesson in there was simple. They built a product at a time. There's a few. So one, they built a product at a time when like this drag and drop interface with the columns was actually a technical challenge to build. Basically, just web technologies weren't where they are today. So they built a product that was innovative, that did something very intuitive in the browser, and they were one of the first to do it. But the reason that it worked for them and got popular is because they made it free. So that's number one. Number two is they kept like this attitude of not monetizing it early, which I think was actually smart because then they could grow it and make decisions that were focused on free and growth and people using it. Now, what happened though is they might have done that for a little too long because they didn't seem to study the use cases of how people were using this generic tool. This tool that allowed you to basically organize your world, you know, organize your task in a very intuitive way that soccer moms were using all the way to product managers, which is a very wide group of people. So my whole thesis in the article is if they were doing their homework or if they did their homework, they would have realized that they could productize the product even more. And what I mean by that is they could verticalize it and say, okay, if you're a product manager, here's how you would configure the product. If you're a soccer mom, here's how you would configure the product. And thankfully, there's a company out there that's actually doing a pretty good job of this, which is called Airtable. They're basically a spreadsheet online. You know, I'm butchering it. They're a lot more than that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They have productized the experience so that they don't get Trello'd, basically, is what I call it.
Wow.
And so what happened, fast forward a little bit, and every other product has the exact type of board that Trello has. Why did that happen? And what could have prevented it? Mm. That was what I went into in the article. And I gave you a gist, you know, I know you read it. So that's the gist of the highlights of what I said. So to me, like, I look at, it's amazing when you can build a business that's based on a free tool that's super innovative and that gives so much value to so many different types of people in the world, right? They had like millions and millions of users. Like it was a ridiculous scale that they hit. But what they missed out on is building a very large business, monetizing basically, and monetizing successfully. And if they just did that, they would have turned into a much larger business much faster. That's the whole thesis. That's like my, I guess, opinion. And I wrote a big post about it.
the second thing that you talked about, which is somewhat related, but I want to highlight still, is the stickiness of it, right? Saying, hey, this product was just not sticky enough for SMBs specifically. Why wasn't it sticky enough? And what should they have done to prevent that from happening?
The stickiness?
Yeah. I mean, you talk about like integrations as one big thing, right? Today, when you sell to SMBs, I know this very well firsthand with clothes, you know, the customer doesn't just use your product in a vacuum, right? It wants your product to play well and integrate with 3, 4, 5, 6 other tools they're using. And it seems like that was something that they missed out on and something that you think they should have invested in a lot more.
Yeah. So for me, like, I think workflow is so important. And workflow meaning how do you fit into someone's daily workflow? Doesn't matter if they're soccer mom planning parties or planning like every soccer game on Trello and like being really diligent about it, or if they're a product manager planning a product roadmap and how people get stuff done in Trello. The problem comes when like people are doing things before they're in Trello that are in other tools, or after they're in Trello that are in other tools, or even on pen and paper or whatever. And what Trello, you know, my whole thesis is like, you do user research, you do customer research, you study how people are using the product, and then you figure out what integrations make sense and how you can basically productize the experience, right? Like a soccer mom might want it integrated with email a lot more, for example, or her calendar, right? While the product manager probably wants it integrated with GitHub, you know, and in a way where like these things are syncing because engineers are usually not in Trello, they're in GitHub, right? And so if you can bring Trello to GitHub, which honestly, GitHub has now done, you will get engineers to at least have an experience. You will have an experience that kind of, you know, they can touch Trello without going into Trello, but also the product manager's happier because they're not pasting tickets or items or cards or whatever from Trello into GitHub, right? So it really, my whole point was like this workflow is the solution. Determining workflow, understanding usage, understanding user behavior in that way will help you figure out how to keep the product stickier and stickier over time. And also, like, today there's more SaaS than ever. And there's new SaaS tools, probably dozens, if not hundreds, coming out every day. And as a result, you want to keep up with integrations. You want to keep up with the tools that your customer base is using and the different types of customers are using, and then support it. So imagine if Trello built a concept of templates, not like their small idea around it, around like you create a board and you can share it, although that was awesome. But you create a board, you create integrations, you create some little more templating than they had, you double down on that feature. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, take this recipe, which is a template plus integrations. And then all of a sudden you can basically do these really amazing things that make it so that your workflows, not just in Trello, but it's updated in other places while you're working in Trello. And I know I put my product manager hat on, but like that's an example.